Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Tony Heil, a council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia. I almost said California, because today is the first podcast episode of ours from California, and I'm very excited. When I first started this podcast, it was just some people here in the Philadelphia area who agreed to do it, which was cool. And then it's quickly added on new guests from New Jersey, New York, and then out into Missouri and Massachusetts and even to Florida and Montana. But now we're going all the way across the country to the great state of California. And we're going to be talking about a position that's really important, and that is school board. There are school board elections in every community. They're always a lower turnout election. And a lot of people don't know their school board members, but they make the most important decisions in your lives as a family with kids, a family without kids, as taxpayers. And today I'm talking with my new friend, hopefully we'll be friends, Maimona Afsalberta, and she's going to tell us her experience. So Maimona, thank you for joining the podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me, Tony. This is a really great project. I'm excited to be a part of it.
Cool. Well, your story is really interesting and unique. I think everyone who's run for office has a unique story for doing so. But tell us, first of all, California is not a monolith. It's different. So where in California are you?
Yeah, so I'm based in the Bay Area, specifically in San Jose. And it was actually the area where I grew up, in East San Jose.
So let's see. How many sports teams are there? There's the Sharks in hockey. Is there anything else?
There's the San Jose Giants that feed into the San Francisco Giants. That's more specifically in San Jose. I'm trying to think. I guess everyone here is either a Niners fan or a Raiders fan, even though I guess they're soon to be moving.
Yeah, well, then we're not going to. I don't like the Raiders.
Golden State Warriors, though.
I like the 49ers, not a fan of the Raiders. But at least we got one. So, but you are on school board in that district, right?
In San Jose. So it's the Franklin McKinley School District.
And how big is that? Is that, my school district is a county district outside of Philadelphia, in King of Prussia. But what's the size, both the size of your district and what makes it unique?
Yeah, so we're just over 7,000 students. And we serve 16 schools. What makes it really unique is, I would really say, the diversity of the district. We serve a high population percentage of students who are Vietnamese American, Hispanic, and just there's a lot of diversity. So we actually have a dual language immersion program that we just started in Vietnamese. It's the first of its kind in Northern California. And we're going to be starting a Spanish dual language program as well this coming year. So we really value the diversity of our community and of our students. And it's really something we're excited to continue supporting.
That's really neat, because I don't know a lot about San Jose. And when you look just on Wikipedia, the percentage of different breakdown, there are so many different groups represented there, which I think probably makes it a pretty cool and unique place just to live, much less be an educator.
Absolutely. It's something I always really appreciated about growing up in East San Jose specifically, is you can walk down the streets and hear all different types of languages and, you know, just a lot of different cultures. And it's really something that was wonderful to be a part of growing up.
So, and speaking of growing up, one question I always ask people on the podcast is, did you always grow up kind of politically minded? Was this something you thought, oh, someday I'm going to run for office? Or did something else spur you to do it?
Yeah, so I honestly don't think I had a concept of even like what a school board was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I think my family, my parents always kind of instilled these values of speaking up and seeking justice and, you know, using your voice really as a tool to help one, empower yourself, but also others. And so I had heard some stories growing up of my grandfather going to the school board to fight for my mom at the time, who was going to school, and they decided to start busing her to another school, even though the rest of her siblings were at that school. So I had heard stories like that, but I never really envisioned myself in that type of a role or, you know, at that leadership level.
But eventually you did, right?
Well, eventually I think I developed more of a concept what an elected leadership role was. I don't think I really had developed, I didn't really think about that as an opportunity that I would be interested in pursuing. Once I figured out I wanted to be a teacher, I was really content just being in my classroom and working with my students in terms of, you know, the work that I do there and just really enjoying that space.
Yeah, I don't know if, I mean, I imagine there's a higher percentage of teachers that are school board members than teachers that are in other elected positions. But maybe I'm wrong. But you took the jump to be from a teacher to making decisions about the school. And that was in 2018?
Yes.
So what was the thing that kind of, did someone encourage you to do it? Did you feel like there was a voice missing that, or something about you that you thought you could bring to the table that would be very empowering and important for students and families?
Yeah, so when I started on the board, well, actually still, I'm the only teacher on the board. And so that kind of was my, part of my reasoning, you know, going into this was we need someone who has that perspective of being in the classroom every day to know how things work. And so I'm actually a teacher in the neighboring district, so we share, I guess, boundaries with the other school district. So I'm a teacher in that district, and then I'm a school board member in Franklin McKinley. And I think one of the biggest reasons why I decided to run for office and really consider the role was actually shortly after the presidential election. It was my fifth year of teaching. I was really, like I said, happy with my role as an educator. I work at the middle school level with students with disabilities. And so there's a lot of, you know, empowerment that happens, students really starting to understand their identity. And shortly after the presidential election, I would say that was the first time I experienced in my role prejudice and discrimination as a visible Muslim woman who wears a headscarf. And that kind of shook me to my core because, you know, living in East San Jose in such a diverse area and in the Bay Area, it's not something that I think people expect. And so throughout, you know, 2017, that was, throughout 2017, there were actually 15 incidents at our school site that were specifically targeting Muslim women, including myself, to where on September 11th, my classroom was vandalized with words of hate associating me with terrorism.
Wow.
And that was, yeah, it was very, you know, disturbing to me, not just as a human, but also, you know, as a teacher, you think about the type of impact that if students are able to do this to me as an adult, I can only imagine what's happening between the students. And I know that as educators, that's not something that we stand for. And really, it was about this realization that we really need to do a better job educating our students about, you know, our community, and that our community doesn't stand for this. So I think going through those experiences and realizing that there weren't really any systems or policies in place to address this from a school district level, you know, from a more systemic level, I think that's what got me to realize. I actually went and spoke after the 15th incident at the school board meeting, and that's when I realized, you know, in order to truly have a voice, a seat at the table, you have to be included in that decision-making process. And so when I heard about the vacancy in Franklin McKinley, I, you know, realized the community serve very similar demographics of students, very similar needs. And so I decided I would go for, you know, applying for the vacancy and going through that process. and was appointed, and then ran in the election November 2018 and won to be able to keep the seat.
Well, that must have been, I can only imagine how scary it must be, excuse me, both during that time period when it was happening with that, those incidents, and then also, I imagine it takes some guts to run because you know that you're now a target of, you know, harsh language, or people are going to view you a certain way. Were you considering that when you decided to run?
You know, I don't think I was considering it as much as, I wasn't considering it as much when I was running. It was more, I think, when I decided to go public with my story of bringing light that this was happening to a school in a very diverse area that we consider to be very progressive, and, you know, that you wouldn't expect to see challenges like this. I think that's where it was more scary, because you never know how people are going to respond. But it was also a really important step for me that in order for us to move forward, I also know that's not what our community stands for. And, you know, after I did speak publicly, that's when I kind of got the outpouring of the support from the community, and we were able to really band together and come up with project-based learning units to address stereotypes and misconceptions, not just of Muslims, but of a lot of different communities who face discrimination and challenges.
All right, especially
in
such
a challenging part. I definitely had more experience, I guess, going through the running for office part in terms of responding to some incidents where we did have some very prejudiced statements made and, you know, things of that nature. But I think it was a lot easier once I had that experience of kind of being able to be in the public eye and share my story publicly.
Yeah, I think about the challenges that someone like yourself has running for office that I don't. Like, I didn't have to represent white guys when I ran for council. There's plenty of them. But did you feel like it was important that you did well, because your election kind of shows that this is what the community stands for? Not that they had to vote for you, but that this is a welcoming community to everyone, and we stand against these kind of harassment.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't want to say I'm representing all Muslims, but in a lot of ways, I haven't ever seen anyone look like me in that type of leadership role, even specifically like in California is what I'm thinking about. And so there was that level of pressure of, you know, there's students that I see in our district who do look like me, and I want them to feel the sense of validation that they can also. You know, when they say you can accomplish whatever you set your mind to, I want that to be a reality. And one way that I think we make that a reality is by having examples or individuals who look like you in those roles. And so that was also important to me.
So, and it's not just important to you as a Muslim woman, but San Jose is so diverse that I imagine when people see that you're able to break through those stereotypes that exist even in California, that these other groups that are represented in San Jose, you know, equality, representation has a ripple effect to other groups as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that's definitely the broader message to the community, is that our community is so diverse, and if we truly are internalizing what that means, then we need to make sure we're including the voices of all of the individuals who make up our community, and really share not just that perspective, but the experience of being a member of that community. And it really helps bring not only those voices to the table, but it makes the way that we run our system and our program and develop our policies, it really makes it more inclusive, more equitable.
It's interesting to me because you're a special education teacher. Of what ages do you kind of look after?
Yeah, so it's middle school, so between 11 and 13.
So my sons are 5 and 3, and it's fascinating because they're both white boys, which is fine. And not making a criticism of that, why would I? But you can see at the earliest ages the lack of representation when you're paying attention to it. like, not for them, but, like, my son AJ, he's three, he likes Paw Patrol. And I said, which one do you like? He likes Marshall. His other friend likes Chase or whatever. But all the girls like Sky because there's only one girl to like. And I think it's important that we have this kind of messaging at the earliest levels in school so that everyone feels like they don't all have to just like one thing, so that the majority group can pick and choose what they like, and then everyone else has like the one thing they can look at, and they don't have as much to look up to.
Absolutely, and you make a good point just in terms of diversity means so many, there's so many different elements to diversity, right? When I was first appointed to the board, I was actually the only woman on the board. And so that carries with it a whole other, you know, perspective. And when you're talking about, you know, the vast majority of the teaching staff, you know, happen to be female, it's that perspective kind of takes on a whole different light. And so that was something that I was also excited to be a part of, is just sharing the perspective of a woman on the school board.
It's really incredible to me how little the representation is for women in many places. Like, there's only one state that's majority female in their assembly, and that's next door in Nevada, which means that 49 other states are majority male, and you miss out on so much when you lack that, you know, representation, and things change dramatically with just even one voice.
Right, and I think it's, you know, I was lucky enough, there's in the November election, so by the time I was, from the time I was appointed to the time that I won the election, we did have my board colleague who joined us, so another woman is now on the board, and it's great to not have to be the only one, because it's not just about sharing that perspective, it's also about, you know, being able to show that these are the leaders of our community, and the leaders of the community are reflective of who's here. And the students that we serve also.
So, but the point of the podcast is you should run. We know why you decided to run. But what were some of the challenges of running? Were you prepared for what you would have to do? Because you have to raise money, you have to door knock, you have to do all these things. Did you know what you were getting into?
I would definitely say I didn't understand kind of all of the components of running for office, especially since I was appointed at first. And didn't really find out that I had to run, since there was, you know, some mix-up with paperwork and the whole appointment process. So I didn't find out actually a few weeks before the school year was starting that I would need to run in the November election. So this was like August. And so it really was a short turnaround. I feel like, you know, for me as a teacher, it's really about, if I ask my students to take risks, then I too have to be willing to take those risks. And this was a risk. It was uncomfortable. It was learning a lot of new things, how to, you know, ask my friends and family and community to support me and support me financially, because that's how you get your message out to the community at large. And, you know, approaching, knocking on strangers' doors at times and explaining your message and why this matters so much to me as a teacher, and as a community member. So there's a lot of learnings, but I feel like it was really well suited with what I do for my day job, and not, you know, encouraging my students to step into uncomfortable zones and learn.
Excuse me. Like I said, I'm recovering from a cold that I've had for forever now. So you had to do all these things. It was the first time you'd ever door knocked, right?
Well, I had door knocked for other, you know, campaigns.
Okay, good.
And, I guess community issues, ballot measures. So it wasn't the first time that I was knocking on doors, but it certainly was the first time that I was saying, "Hi, I'm your local, you know, local school board member, and I'm up for election, and, you know, here's why you should vote for me," and kind of the broader message of what we're fighting for.
I think that door knocking for yourself is intimidating to any first-time candidate, so no matter your background. Did you get over that intimidation, or do you think you were more suited to it because you talk to students every day in front of a classroom?
Well, I'd say students are very different than adults, at least yeah. middle school students are. They're more concerned about how entertaining the lesson is and how engaging it is. So it was a little bit different. I think the biggest thing was just stepping out of my comfort zone and realizing that this isn't just about me as an individual, but this is about a broader, the broader impact that we're truly trying to cultivate and sharing the values that I hold and how that impacts the broader community. I think focusing on that message made it a lot easier for me and really relaying that this isn't just about me, right? This is about the types of impact we're trying to continue to build in the district and for our students. So I think definitely it took some practice, but I think we made it through.
And so you won your election. What was that feeling when you won your very first election? Because you had been part of campaigning for things before, but now there's the validation that, you know, like, people like you and they validate it with their votes.
You know, it's just, there's no real words to describe one being able to like casting a vote for yourself and then, you know, waking up the next morning and seeing that, you know, that all the work that the entire community behind you has supported you in getting to this moment and that you're successful in doing that. It's really hard to put into words. And I think the biggest piece for me was also kind of carrying on this like familial legacy of realizing the challenges that my family has been through to one, you know, be in this country and two, utilize education as a tool of empowerment. And so, you know, my grandfather is actually an orphan and my other grandparents are refugees. And so understanding like the challenges that they went through and how they used education to really not just make a better life for themselves, but make a better life for our entire family. It was a real full circle moment for me. Also knowing the challenges that, you know, I personally went through, you know, as a result of the election.
Now you mentioned that the 2016 election started prompting a lot of things that happened in your community. And then you mentioned about your family and refugees. It feels like you are unfairly forced to be political because of everything going on with the Trump administration. Like I post on Facebook all the time because, you know, that's a problem. But I see some people I know who say, oh, I'm tired of politics. I didn't go on Facebook for a week because everyone's just talking about politics. But I just feel like it must be exhausting that your life is political, right? Like you and those people you care about, including your students, right now, like they don't have the luxury of not caring about politics, right?
I think that's exactly right. You know, I never envisioned myself being a politician. I don't like that word because of all that's associated with it, right? But when I think about the fact that these decisions have direct impacts on the lives of thousands of students and are really making and breaking what we're setting up for in terms of their future, that's why this matters to me. That's not a luxury of me, you know, deciding whether or not I want to be a part of that. That I feel like is a responsibility of, you know, making sure that we are providing those outcomes, not just to students, but to their families. And obviously, as someone who, you know, identifies so visibly as, you know, what people see as the other, part of this is being in this role is helping me break that and helping me, you know, show that our community is stronger when we work together and truly include everyone in that process.
And you've been putting together new processes and policies as a school board member. What can other school boards or other districts, school or otherwise, communities do to improve their policies so that everyone can be included and that we make sure everyone understands the importance of that?
I'd say one of the most important things that I've learned both as a teacher and as a school board member is really taking the time to listen to our youth. They have some of the most incredible ideas, and not just ideas, but they have the capacity and have demonstrated they are able to take the action to follow through with that. And that's both boldness and courage that we sometimes don't see from our adults in the room. And I've seen that happen, you know, with policies and systems that we've put in place in our district as a result of our youth speaking up and organizing and really leading and, you know, putting the pressure down to really enact a lot of these changes. So that's something I'm really excited to be about, be a part of.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned about, you know, the other issues with the Trump administration and forcing people to be political, but it does seem like a lot of young people now feel forced to be political, whether they wanted to or not. You see the climate protests, you see other things with, I feel like there's more youth engagement than there has been, at least since the Iraq War. Maybe, is that how you see it as a teacher and an educator there?
Well, I think our youth are, they're not just waiting for the opportunity. They see the ways that this is impacting them. They see the way that it's impacting them in their future. And in a lot of ways, I think they realize that they don't, if they don't act now, if the adults in the room don't start acting now, and if they don't start acting now, we're really not leading them with much for their future. And so I think that's a sense of urgency and responsibility we see from them, you know, now, that is really, you know, it's encouraging, and it does give me hope that there's hope for the future when we have our youth who aren't willing to compromise on what they stand for.
That's important, and it's also important to be able to understand what you stand for, too. That sometimes takes a lot of maturity, which I know a lot of 50 and 60 and 70-year-olds who don't have that yet. So
yeah, it's definitely encouraging, especially as a teacher. It just gives me so much pride to see our youth leading in this way, and not just waiting for the adults to empower them, but empowering themselves to be able to make these decisions and advocate and fight for their future.
That's the joy of being an organizer, whether you're a political organizer, a social organizer, or a teacher, which is those things, is knowing that a person that you're training is empowered to do it on their own, that they can come to you if you need it, if they need it, but they don't need you.
It really is. It's kind of the light bulb moment as a teacher. It just feels really validating to know that, you know, one, they don't need you, and one, they've, and two, that they figured out how to lead that path for themselves, because ultimately I'm not going to be their teacher forever, even though I joke and say I'm your teacher for life. But, you know, we're not going to always be there. And so they have to be able to cultivate those skills and develop a mindset that's going to lead them on a path forward.
Well, great. So you're empowering people. You have been inspired by your community and your family and your history. You are changing the demographics of your school board and perceptions in your area. But now, why should other people run for office? We need more people to run, so why should more people do it for any office?
I think because it helps. More people need to run for office, and more people need to think about who they are, because they are bringing things to the table. And I say that as a young person. I say that as a woman of color. I say that as a minority, because when you don't consider all that you're bringing to the table, it's hard to envision that future for yourself. And I think a lot of people shortchange the experiences that they do have and the skills that they have developed, and thinking that that isn't a possibility for their future. I think that's absolutely the reason why we need more people running for office, and we need, you know, a variety of people running for office and thinking about all that they can contribute to building a stronger community and a stronger nation in that position, in that leadership capacity.
Great. Before we go, are there any organizations or things that you'd like to recommend for other people who might be interested and inspired to run for something?
I would just say, gosh, there's so many. If you actually, you know, take the time to investigate. I'm trying to think of any off the top of my head right now. I know the Council on American Islamic Relations, in terms of their Muslim Youth Leadership Program, was really instrumental for me as a Muslim, developing leader at that age, and instilling some of those ideas that I hadn't even considered in the past, even just in terms of being civically engaged. That's the one that comes to mind off the top of my head.
Well, that's important. It's important for every group to have the organizations that can empower them to be heard, to be seen, and maybe one day run for office. So thank you so much, Maimona. I appreciate you running. I'm sorry that I almost called you Mimosa. I'm sure that's not the first time that's happened.
Oh, that's okay. That's a new one.
Oh, good. Well, I'm off and I can have a drink and that would probably be good. So thank you so much for choosing to run for office and thank you for being part of the podcast. I really wish you luck in everything you're doing in San Jose.
Thank you so much, Tony, for having me.
All right. We might even root for the Sharks. Maybe not, but we might.
That's good.
All right. And if you're listening, I hope you're inspired. Please look for resources on our social media pages. And maybe you should run for office, too. Thank you. Make sure to share this, subscribe, and send in your recommendations for new guests on the You Should Run podcast.